We have people being scared they're going to be pulled off the road, that they're going to lose their gun, their badge, that someone at work will find out and they'll lose their standing socially.
This is their 911 call. Like, if they call us, you can imagine how bad it must be for them.
And honestly, there isn't much at this point that would shock me or surprise me or make me fall off the chair. I mean, usually when something comes out, it's easy to roll with it.
When you have tools and you give them to people and they realize, I can manage my emotional responses here. I just have to choose to.
Doing EMDR with someone and they have this epiphany and you see their entire face light up. Oh my God, now I know why I do X, Y, and Z.
Mind Health LLC provides this podcast, including any references, links, or other knowledge resources, for informational purposes only. The podcast and its hosts do not provide any medical or professional advice, and anything said should not be taken as a replacement for medical, clinical, professional advice, diagnosis, or medical intervention. If you take any action or inaction as a result of any of the content you consume on this podcast, this is based solely on your decision, and the podcast and its hosts cannot be held liable for any of the consequences of such action or inaction. Nothing in the podcast is intended to establish a therapist-patient relationship, to replace the services of a trained therapist, doctor, or health professional, or otherwise to substitute for professional mental health, medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Welcome to today's episode of Respond to Resilience. I'm David Dashinger. I'm joined with my co-host, Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMT. In this episode, we'll dive deep into the heart of first responder mental health and wellness, and we're keeping it all in-house as our co-hosts, Bonnie and Stacey, are two mental health experts who dedicate their lives to the mental well-being of those on the front lines. Today, Stacey and Bonnie are unlocking the doors to a first responder therapist's office, giving us an exclusive peek behind the curtain. So we'll be debunking some common misconceptions about therapy, shedding light on the profound benefits of speaking with a therapist, and exploring the transformative power of EMDR therapy. Stay with us. We'll be right back as we embark on this journey of discovery with Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers.
With vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMTB.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, LinkedIn, and all the podcast platforms. And check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Bonnie and Stacey, welcome as sort of hybrid guests, co-hosts.
Thank you. You make it sound like we do nothing all day. I mean, really.
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to pick your brains and find out all about what happens behind that all elusive therapist door. Probably for many people, it's a big mystery what happens back there.
But let's
start with this question. Stacey, can you give us just a little more depth into your clinical practice and what kind of first responders you see there?
I see all first responders, whether they be police, mainly police, I would say, probably because of my affiliation with a local police department, but definitely fire, EMTs, paramedics, dispatchers. I see from all walks of life of first responders, so, and veterans. You know, these populations tend to have post-traumatic stress injury. So, and that's something I specialize in, as does Bonnie.
Sure. And Bonnie, any differences or pretty much the same type of responders that you see?
It's pretty much the same. I would say I'm more like probably 70, 75% first responders and the rest are civilians in my practice. I tend to get really serious civilian cases, so parents who've lost children in traumatic ways and some of those kinds of referrals, but I also see all first responders. There are some people who are hybrid events who used to be in the armed forces and who are now first responders because of those careers just dovetailing. So very similar to work to Stacy.
Got it. Well, here's the big question. So, you know, we can conjure up thoughts of, you know, the couch and all kinds of books, and, like a statue of Sigmund Freud maybe on the desk. But what's it really like inside the office, Bonnie? Like, take us inside your office. Give us a little, like, mental, verbal tour. What would somebody experience if they come in there?
Well, it's funny because, funny, not funny, but people are very scared, you know, and what they're, I think, ultimately scared of is being vulnerable and being exposed. And I think that makes it more scary than anything. It's not coming into the office necessarily, but it's getting over that feeling of being vulnerable and exposed to someone that either maybe you've met a little bit and have a little comfort, or you don't know them at all. And I think that fear leads into the fear of judgment. What is this person going to think of me when I tell them my real thoughts? What diagnosis are they going to give me? Are they going to call 911? You know, so I think there's so many fears that happen. And then in the first responder world, there's more fears. We have people being scared they're going to be pulled off the road, that they're going to lose their gun, their badge, that someone at work will find out and they'll lose their standing socially. So I think there are general stigmas for therapy, but then some of the layers that we deal with first responders are very unique to their culture and their population. So if we can get someone in the door, then I can promise we make it as comfortable as possible. You know, all of us therapists have some kind of experience ourselves with therapy. And if you're an EMDR therapist, you've had EMDR. So we know that feeling of kind of having to jump over the lip, but we try really hard to make it as comfortable as possible. You know, to try to be, for myself, I try not to be pathologizing. No, I try to normalize their feelings right off the bat. And I'll just name it. Like, look, I know it's scary to be here. It took a lot of courage. I appreciate that. You know, you only tell me what you're ready to tell me right now. So that's the other thing for people to know. You don't have to tell us everything in one shot the first day.
Right. Well, Stacy, give us a little look inside your practice, your office, and how do you approach working with first responders?
Right. So definitely confidentiality. I mean, certainly confidentiality is for any client, but I will emphasize that even more with first responders, police in particular, and making sure that I stagger clients to the best of my ability. So first responder, civilian like that, because I don't know who knows who. I do have a gap in between each session, right? So somebody can leave, there's 15 minutes, and then the next person can come up. Because, you know, first responders, some of them don't want to be seen, you know, by a either somebody in the department or somebody that they know from other departments. I feel that people with post-traumatic stress, especially first responders and veterans, need to kind of be positioned in the office where they can see the door and there can be nothing in between them and the door. And that, I think, brings a lot of comfort, you know, making sure that there's a clear egress, not that they ever have to just leave, you know, all of a sudden, but I think that that just brings comfort. You know, they sit in the far corner of my office and they're facing me, and I'm sitting at a very comfortable distance because I don't want to be too close because of that, you know, possibly making them uncomfortable and bringing up their vulnerability. So really starting at a distance and then seeing what they could handle as far as proximity, but they can always see the door, you know, and especially with EMDR, if things start getting, you know, rolling and they start getting, feeling some intense emotions and having visuals and maybe even auditory reminders of a bad call. This goes for all EMDR clients, but I'll emphasize this with first responders who may not want to get emotional. You know, they may start to get really angry and they want to use swears. They want to raise their voice, or maybe even they shed a few tears, you know, to say, if at any time you need to take a break, you want me to go get you a glass of water, if you need to go use the restroom, take a walk in the hall, you're welcome to do that. You're not glued to that seat. Mm-hmm. And so just, I guess, amplifying the comfort measures and the confidentiality measures. I think the other thing, and I know Bonnie has these items in her office, is like patches from different departments, challenge coins, different memorabilia. I have little items that veterans have given me. I have a 50 caliber bullet that a veteran wanted me to have for a trauma that, you know, that we worked on. I have a U.S. flag, you know, just, you know, and having some funny pictures, you know, for them to, you know, just to realize that this is not all bad news. You know, the focus is not always just on like what happened to you that, you know, brought you to your knees. It's like we can joke around. You know, I think Bonnie and I are both guilty of gallows humor, you know, right along with the first responders. My husband calls it middle school humor. I don't understand why. I mean, I find it's hilarious, some of the things that, you know, Bonnie and I talk about.
This episode is made possible by Cover, an all-natural military-grade mineral sunscreen lotion. Providing broad-spectrum protection in an SPF 30, Cover blocks 97% of harmful UVA and UVB rays, but is light enough to allow your skin to breathe. First responders often spend long hours in the sun, and prolonged skin exposure is one of the hazards of the job. First responders love Cover because it won't stain clothing and the 4-ounce bottle fits easily into a backpack or go bag. Go to kovr.respondertv.com to get 15% off all Cover sunscreen products. That's kovr.respondertv.com.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
One of the things I noticed when you both facilitate the peer support group is that you are able to roll with any conversation, no matter where it goes.
Yeah.
You know, and if it gets into funny, you're able to roll with that. And
oh,
if it's
absolutely.
Serious, you know, nothing takes you aback. And I think that's another important thing is, you know, some people have said, well, I went to see a therapist and I kind of, you know, told them all the traumas I've been through. And then the therapist needed therapy after I talked to them. So I can you speak to that as far as, you know, how you both sort of are able to take measures so you're not affected, or what are you, you know, how would you tell somebody who's coming in that they don't have to be concerned about exposing you to what their trauma was?
Well, so before I roll into that, just to go back to the office comment, I've gotten in the habit now with first responders, I'll say, look, why don't you take a minute, look around the office, because their tendency is to scan their environment and take it all in.
Yeah.
And I find if I don't give the permission, they kind of like peek over my shoulder to see what all the cool toys are on the shelf. Or, you know, I have some funny, you know, Barbies that are a fireman and a policewoman and a firewoman. So, but if I give them the permission, hey, take a look around. And then I also give them permission to ask me questions. You know, if there's anything you want to know about me, I'm happy to answer that. And I think that once they know that we're human, sometimes the boundaries feel a little different. You know, if a first responder asks me, when you were an EMT, did you have a call like this? I'm going to say yes, if I feel like it's productive and helpful to them. And so right then and there, we're being a real person, honest. And I think when you show that little bit of vulnerability, not by sitting and crying and not handling the stories, but when you show the vulnerability in the appropriate way, then they know that you're their person. And then to go into the rolling with comments, that's also cultural. If you're going to work with first responders like we do, you have to roll with it, you know? And honestly, there isn't much at this point that would shock me or surprise me or make me fall off the chair. I mean, usually when something comes out, it's easy to roll with it, you know? And you see that with group, we see that as well. You never know what's coming out. That's one thing you learn. You might think it's going in one direction and it goes in the other, but I think the ability to be flexible and hold space for them and vacillate between, because one of the coping skills of first responders is vacillating between the difficult, hard, dark stuff and the easier, lighter heart humor that we see. So if we can kind of vacillate between those two things with them, then we're meeting them where they are.
Got it.
And it gives them a reprieve too from the intensity, because things do get intense. Why do they get intense? Because you work difficult intense jobs, right? And so I think sometimes people just want to take a step back, crack a joke. And if you allow that to happen and roll with it, then it's just so much more comfortable for the first responder or veteran, you know. So
it's not like a 45 minutes or an hour wall to wall like trauma and drama. You actually can laugh and have fun. It's not like all serious.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Stacey, I wanted to kind of follow up on something you touched on, and that's the confidentiality. So, you know, some first responders might have concerns that somehow what they talk about is going to get back to their peers, to their administration, to HR. How does that get handled in terms of your how you handle the information that anybody discloses to you?
If I suspect that they are really worried about that, like they're making comments like everything I tell you in here stays in here, right? You know, and they may have said it a couple times, and I'll just reiterate, like I have, you know, even though you may see me in your department because I may be giving a presentation or I may be working with your peer support team or doing a debrief, I am not there talking about you. In fact, we may even have a plan. Do you want me to acknowledge you? Do you want me to just say hello? I'm not going to say, hey, how are things going with your wife? You know, because then that's going to betray them and anyone that's within earshot that, you know, maybe I'm working with them. You know, so we have an agreement ahead of time. You know, if you see me in your department, I'm not there talking about you. I'm there usually teaching or working with a peer support team in some capacity. So, and in some of the departments that I have a closer relationship with, I can say, you know, yes, I do know your chief. I know your deputy chief. But if I am talking with them, whether I'm there at the department or I'm on the phone, I am not talking about you. Mm-hmm. And I also reassure them, I've never had a chief or a deputy chief ask me, you know, how is so-and-so doing? Because they may know the person is in therapy because that person told them, you know, but even if they ask me, I'm just, you know, I'm going to be as evasive as possible. So
I would say we're very, very careful. And as are all the members on our team, because we have to be, you know, this is the business that we're in and the stakes are so high for them that we would never want to breach that for them. If anything, sometimes I think we go overboard in a good way of saying, like, are you sure if you see me, you want me to say hi? Or, you know, because some people will say, oh, I don't mind. I want people to know. They'll probably figure it out and I don't care. But I say, are you sure? That's okay. But it's a spectrum because you get some responders who want to be totally open like that and they want people to know and they want to shout it from the rooftops. But then you get others where, let's say our office is positioned right next to their department. They may not even come to us because they don't want someone seeing their car near my office because someone's going to put two and two together. Because if there is something, first responders are smart and they put the puzzle pieces together. So that's why Stacey was saying you have to be careful how you schedule people. You know, if you're seeing two people from the same department, you're never going to put them back to back because that's just implosion and it's not fair. No one really deserves that. So I think there are ways that we can go overboard to try to protect that for them. And also something to know about us is we're very protective of our first responders. I mean, I think all of our clients, but especially them.
Right.
And we would never want anything to happen to them in any way, shape or form. So if anything, I think we go over the top.
And to add to that, Bonnie, you know, I imagine you do the same thing, but like, because first responders are so resistant to asking for help themselves, like if you know that someone is particularly struggling, you know, they just had a session with you and they're going through a really rough time, I'm probably going to check on them the next day. Yeah, I might call them, I might text them. And I imagine you do the same. And it's more so than I would do with civilians, because I have a feeling they're not going to reach out to me and say, you know, I didn't sleep last night. I had a new nightmare. I'm really not doing well. I think, you know, it kind of, you have to be a proactive therapist. If you work with first responders, you know, you have to, they're on my mind, you know, and I tend to be very intuitive. If I have a gut sense that someone is struggling, I will just reach out to them. And I'm usually right. You know? So there is that resistance. We should probably talk a little bit about what is unique about first responders and starting therapy. A lot of times they don't want to go to therapy. They've waited a long time. And as Bonnie and I have both said to each other, like, this is their 911 call. Like, if they call us, you can imagine how bad it must be for them. You know, mm-hmm. they have an ultimatum from their spouse, mm-hmm. Their significant other. This may be like, they've tried to help themselves. They've read books, they've talked to other people, and, you know, it feels almost like a failure for them. And so Bonnie and I will see them right away. You know, we will respond. If we get a voicemail, we're on the phone with them, and we're going to see them within the next day or so, whatever we can, you know, do with our schedule, because we don't want to lose them, you know?
And we also mimic that on the team. You know, I think we all do that in our private practice, but also as the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team, when we get a referral, we act on it immediately. You know, we mm-hmm. get back to that yeah. person, we connect them to a therapist. But I right. also do what you do, Stacey. I'll reach out the next day and say, hey, I know yesterday was your first EMDR. How did it go for you? And I right. find that goes such a long way with them mm-hmm. because a lot of them were not asked how they were as children, which is another topic of difficult mm-hmm. childhoods leading people into this world. Mm-hmm. But it also shows them that I care. Like they're very respectful of our time. I notice they don't want to take a minute more of our time, more so I think than civilians. And right. what I know yeah. when we make that extra, where we take extra time for them, they really, really appreciate it. And I think they know how much we care when we do that.
And that's our first responder community, man. We do amazing things for other people at the risk of ever doing anything amazing for ourselves.
Knowing that we have additional stressors, that means we have to take on the responsibility of making ourselves more resilient.
And on game day, we must succeed as a team. When one of us succeeds, we all succeed.
Most superhero origin stories, they're all stories of post-traumatic growth. You're like the Hulk that's been exposed to gamma radiation, and now you have this super ability because of that trauma you've experienced.
Before you became a firefighter, paramedic, and EMT, whatever it is, you were a human. You started off as a human. That human's got to be taken care of, and then we can take care of other people.
We touched on this, and let's go a little deeper. Like, when should somebody see a therapist? What are some of the telltale signs or conditions or symptoms, or what would you recommend?
Well, I think that please don't wait until you're numb, because we either yeah. it's interesting. We get two extremes. You know, we'll get people that are really, really numb, severely depressed. Mm-hmm. They might be addicted to either a substance or addicted to social media or what have you to zone out. Mm-hmm. Or we see someone who is intoxicated a good amount of the time, or their marriage is in really deep trouble. Their kids mm-hmm. are really struggling. Yeah. I think people wait until it's so severe that there's no other option.
Yeah.
So in a perfect world, I would like to see them reach out when something is starting to not be okay, when mm-hmm. you're starting to disengage, when you're starting to lose interest in the things that you normally love. You notice you're drinking too much. That's when we would want people to ideally reach out.
And, you know, a lot of first responders, they may not be the ones that notice it. It may be their right. peers, their significant other, family members, friends, you know, hey, buddy, you're not yourself. You know, is everything okay? You might be getting comments like that, or, you know, like, that's your eighth beer, you know, mm-hmm. you okay driving home? Like, is everything okay? You know, and if you notice that you're getting feedback from people that you seem to be a little bit off, and that seems to be something that is chronic. I mean, we all have off days, right? We all have bad days,
yep.
And behavior that is not consistent. But if you're consistently off, something's up. And that's not something that people can fix by reading a self-help book or watching a couple of podcasts or whatever, you know, or YouTube videos. You probably need a one-on-one therapist. You know, if you don't feel comfortable starting there, go to your peer support team. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, you know, if you feel more comfortable talking to a peer support member because you just don't know if you're, you know, ready for going into therapy, start there. And then maybe the peer support member and you can work it out, and you guys can meet for coffee and kind of like, until you resolve your issue. Or the peer support team member might say, you know, I'm really concerned about you. This is kind of, I'm kind of in over my head with you, with this information. And I really think I'd feel much more comfortable if you saw somebody. Here's some names, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I think that's another kind of responsibility for the company officers to be able to keep a, you know, an eye out, keep tabs on their members and be aware of if they're not acting themselves consistently, that, you know, as company officers, we should really know that might be time to have a conversation or at least offer some resources and act, make a positive suggestion on their behalf. So let's talk about misconceptions. I think you came up with a few earlier, but what are some of the misconceptions about therapy? We'll start with Stacey.
Like you come in, you lay on the couch, I'm sitting behind you quietly, not saying much of anything, and I've got a notepad, and I just want you to free associate, you know, just say anything that comes to your mind. Don't screen anything out. You know, that's the old like psychoanalytic
talk about
way, but
mother.
A lot of, yeah. Talk yeah. about your mother. When were you potty trained? Did you breastfeed? You know, things like that, you know, very, some uncomfortable questions, but no, it's not like that. You know, I think especially with first responders, kind of just meeting them human to human. Right. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it if they look around my office and say, hey, where'd you get that? You know, mm-hmm. And then we can just start off a conversation like that. They get to know me a little bit without me launching into, let me tell you about myself. Just ease into the conversation, you know, always with the, you know, if there's a topic you just don't, you're not ready to discuss, just, we can just skip right over it. You know, we've got plenty of time to work on this. Mm-hmm. If we don't get to it today, not a problem. You don't have to spill your guts, you know, in this first intake interview. Mm-hmm. I've also had clients, both first responders and civilians, say they'll come in and they'll be like, you know, I didn't really sleep that well last night. I think I'm coming down with like a sore throat or whatever. I don't know if I'm up for EMDR today, because EMDR can be kind of tense. Mm-hmm. So letting the client direct the nature of the session. So maybe they just want to talk. Maybe they just want to reflect on their past EMDR sessions and what they've gotten out of them, where they were when we began, where they are now, where we're heading, you know. So not every session has to be, you know, where you're getting into very heavy material and white knuckling it, you know. Mm-hmm. If you want to take a session off, you know, rather than lie and say that you're sick or you got called in or whatever, because I think that happens a few times. I like people to know that we could take it easy. You know, we could just have a very light session, whatever works for you.
Okay. And Bonnie, just to add another dimension to this, I guess another misconception might be like, you're going to be in therapy for 10 years, you know, like, oh, so yeah. how does that play out in real life, especially with EMDR?
Well, realistically, that is your choice, whether you're in therapy for 10 years or not, right? So typically with EMDR, we get fairly fast results, but mm-hmm. it also depends on age. It depends on complexity of trauma. You know, if you're someone who's come in with one incident, that looks very mm-hmm. different than someone right. who had a very difficult, neglectful, abuseful childhood, then went to the military, then went to first responder world. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to have decades of trauma, and that's more of a complex trauma navigation, I would say.
Yeah.
So it really depends how someone is presenting to us. But in the beginning, it's really important for me to feel like they have control over their treatment. And I tell them, this is your therapy. You know, you decided to come here. And even in that first session, instead of me kind of starting to say why I think they're there, I'll just ask, what do you think led you here today? You know, and then I have a funny saying that I say to clients when I'm trying to get them to understand the connection of something from the past to today. And I'll say, okay, put your therapist hat on. Why do you mm-hmm. think you're right. thinking this today? You know, and then they do right. it for a minute and it becomes a joke, you know, because I think sometimes they put us on a pedestal because we have a degree or because we are therapists. And mm-hmm. that's right. my way of saying, look, like, you can figure this out too. Uh-huh. Yes, you have me guiding you, or you can bounce these things and I might be able to point out some things that you don't see. But if we really are in that vulnerable, trusting place, then I find that they will be able to figure some of it out. And those are the epiphany moments that are, they're right. so exciting to see, especially in an EMDR session when you're doing EMDR with someone and they have this epiphany and you see their entire face light up and they'll pause and you say, so what happened? And they'll say, oh my God, now I know why I do X, Y, and Z. You know, like they just have these moments and it's a blessing to watch that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the most part, the therapy is collaborative, right? It's not like, yes, we are experts in our field, right? Bonnie and I, we studied long and hard and you know, we have our diplomas on the wall and whatnot, but it's a collaborative effort. And I think everybody has an inner therapist, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we invite the client to, as Bonnie just said, put your therapist hat on, mm-hmm. you know, to tap, you know, tap into your wiser self and cause you've got this, like you know, you can figure this out. And if you can't, I'll help you out with that. I'll give you a couple of hints. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing magical about us. It's just that, you know, I mean, Bonnie and I, you know, we're empathic people. We know what it's like to be in therapy ourselves. Mm-hmm. We know the benefit of being in therapy. And we want to give that experience to, especially to first responders and veterans. So.
Mm-hmm. At the core of every community beats the heart of its first responders, ever present on the front line, making the impossible look routine. Through the relentless pressure and the unseen scars, our frontline warriors silently battle the stress of the job. It's crucial they armor up mentally and emotionally, not just for the community they safeguard, but for the families they return to. Supporting the wellness and mental health of first responders is priority number one. By championing their well-being, we're ensuring they're unstoppable, both in the line of duty and in life. Step up for the titans who protect us, because when they're firing on all cylinders, they're not just first responders, they're game changers. Join us. Visit ResponderTV.com to be the difference.
It's always interesting because there's a fear too that we're going to assign some kind of homework. You know, like, what are you going to make me do outside of here?
Right,
you know, yeah. And obviously them taking our guidance and suggestions and advice and imparting in their life is very important. But I am always absolutely floored in a good way when someone does homework and they bring it to me.
Yeah.
And they say, I started a journal and I've been keeping track of everything from last EMDR session to this one, you know, or I thought about that memory some more within reason. Obviously, if it's really disturbing, I don't want them to ruminate, but sometimes the thoughts are just so evolved, right? Or they have pieces of the puzzle they didn't have. So I'm always floored when they bring it to me and say, I spent all of this time on this work, or I found this mm-hmm. book I want you to look at.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let's dive deeper into that, because you're mentioning kind of like resources and tools that somebody can use outside of therapy. Do you recommend or offer things that people can use to help them on their journey, their, you know, their healing, their kind of wellness journey? We'll start with Stacey. Like someone, do you have go-tos that you suggest?
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure Bonnie does this too. Like there's a grounding exercise. I didn't create it, but I teach it to everyone, not just first responders, but it's four elements and it helps them ground so that when they're not in my office and they're having a moment where they're feeling a bit overwhelmed, that they have a tool. Mm-hmm. And so for some people that are interested, I have HeartMath, you know, where they can put an ear sensor. It measures their heart rate variability, which is a very sensitive measure of their internal state of stress. And they can plug it into their phone and then they can look at the screen. And if they have, you know, they can see if they're stressed or not. You know, some people can't tell. Mm-hmm. And they can't tell that, or they don't believe that by slowing down their breathing diaphragmatically, trying to conjure up a feeling of love or appreciation across their chest, that actually can calm their body. But then when the red light starts to turn blue and then eventually turns green on their phone, they're like, I did that. And I can do that without alcohol. And I can do that and feel better, even if I'm not in Stacey's office and we're doing a grounding exercise. Like I can do this by myself. And it's free, you know, I can learn how to deep breathe and calm myself down. There's no side effects to it. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you have tools and you give them to people and they realize that I can manage my emotional responses here. You know, like I just have to choose to.
I just heard about a ring. I think it's called the Aura Ring, and I don't think it's free, but it will measure heart yep. rate variability and sleep, quality of sleep, and a lot of other
I have clients that come in and they'll just tell me, you know, like, this is what this is the data from yesterday, you know. But yeah, it's fascinating what we have available to us now that lets us know about what's going on inside of our body, you know.
Well, and I think it's a two-pronged approach. I look at it as a two-pronged approach. So I have one, the skills and tools that I teach someone in the office, which are the grounding techniques, the breathing, CBT, how to stop negative thoughts and practice new ones, mindfulness. So there's all of the things that we draw on as therapists to try to impart into people. And then there are all of the external things that we can suggest that they do, like nutrition, exercise, acupuncture, like supplemental things like acupuncture, massage. But I'm constantly lending books out, especially to the first responders. Like, some of them love it, some of them don't want it. So I try to just gauge, you know, if someone's just taking this book to make me happy, then please don't take it. But if you truthfully want to read it and get something from it, we have some wonderful books for EMDR that are great for people to read while they're going through the process to understand. One of them is Every Memory Deserves Respect. I've been giving that book to a lot of people lately when they start. It's wonderful. There's Francine Shapiro's original book, Getting Past Your Past. Those are, I would say, kind of Bibles in my here for me in my office.
Right.
And then because of the podcast, we're also aware of a lot of wonderful books and tools that all branches of first responder world can use. So including the podcast. I give out the podcast a lot. And I say, look, if you tolerate hearing my voice any more than you already do, then listen to this. You never, ever know. Like, you might just glean something from it by listening. So I try to give as much as possible. But again, what they do with all that is really up to them, because we can't force it.
Got it. Okay. So let's say someone they figure out they need to see a therapist, they need EMDR. How do they find the right person to get help? And what's the difference between a general clinician and a trauma-informed clinician, Stacey?
Well, if they want specifically EMDR, you know, they could, we have a website, it's fctrt.org. They could go there if they're local. I mean, if they're not local.
It's local to Connecticut.
Local to Connecticut. They can go to emdria.org, you know, EMDR, International Association.org, and click on find a therapist. You can put your zip code in there. And you may be able to filter for like first responder issues, trauma, post-traumatic stress, and even insurance. I know on Psychology Today you can do that, but Psychology Today will show you if you put in your, zip code, it'll just show you therapists in your area. But if you want specifically an EMDR therapist, you can put that in the filter as well and look specifically for your insurance and see if that therapist takes your insurance. So what's the difference between an EMDR trauma-informed therapist or, there are non-EMDR trauma-informed therapists as well that practice maybe CBT or prolonged.
CBT is
cognitive behavioral therapy. PE is prolonged exposure. I don't practice that. I find EMDR to be so much more gentle, to be honest with you. And there's no homework with EMDR as there would be with both CBT and PE. But, you know, you have to have a special training in the effect of psychological trauma on the body and the brain. Like, if you don't have that, you really should not be practicing trauma therapy. And understanding the impact, not just on the body, but on development. Because if you have clients that have been exposed to trauma from an early age, we have to appreciate how that affects them as they develop and how that might translate when they become an adult. And, you know, they start, they have more serious relationships or they have children, because a lot of this stuff, if it's not healed, it's going to play out later on. So that's my answer to that.
Okay. And Bonnie, like, how do you suggest somebody find the right therapist if they need help?
So obviously it's dependent on what you're going through. So if you know it's trauma related, but then again, it's hard to say that because I have people who come in and say, I don't have trauma. And two sessions in, they say, well, my mother died when I was 10. Is that trauma? I'm like, yes, yes, it is. So the truth of the matter is, I think every therapist should be screening for trauma. You know, any therapist who's licensed, who does solid work, is going to do a thorough intake with a client. And sometimes that intake is on paper. Sometimes it's just a very thorough meeting. But I really think in an ideal world that even a generalized therapist who says, wow, I'm really stumbling on this person having more trauma, I think they could use a trauma therapist. So sometimes we'll get transfers from those therapists. Or as EMDR therapists, we can also do adjunctive EMDR therapy, where someone can keep their primary therapist for kind of the day-to-day, run-of-the-mill, the family stuff, the day-to-day emotions, depression, anxiety. But if we know there's a trauma piece for EMDR, then we can come in and treat solely the trauma. So that's something that a lot of people don't realize. I think Stacy and I do some of that, but we also ultimately end up being the person's primary and their EMDR therapist. Mm-hmm. And so there's a dance of, you know, some sessions we might talk more and some we may get right down to work. But I think when someone's really looking for a therapist, I think you look to see that they have what you need. So if you have a substance abuse issue, you look for someone's information underneath their description that they specialize in substance abuse. I think the specialization piece is super, super important because I wouldn't go to an eye doctor for a foot problem, right? So, and again, people don't know what they don't know.
Right.
But I think when you're doing this kind of research, especially if you're interested in EMDR, the EMDRIA.org, EMDRIA.org, that's our governing body. So if someone is a certified EMDR therapist, they're going to be listed in there. And you can know that that's a vetted and trusted entity in our world. But look for the acronyms. If you don't know what something means, if someone says to you, well, I do TFCBT, ask what that means. So you're the consumer. I would say you ask everything you want to know.
And also ask if the therapist has experience working with first responders. That's critical. Just because that they've worked with doing trauma focused therapy doesn't mean that they've necessarily worked with first responders or veterans. So you really want them to be familiar with the culture that you work in.
Sure.
It's just going to, it's going to go so much better that, you know, there'll be a match there.
Right.
I think it's imperative, and we would want anybody listening or watching to know you have a right to ask these questions. And if you call a therapist and they say, no, I've never worked with a first responder, but I'm really willing to learn about your culture. If someone is game for that, then that's wonderful. But for someone who's in crisis, they don't have the time to teach someone, right? So it's okay to say, look, I'm going to try to find someone who specializes and understands this shift work thing that impacts my life every day.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org. or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
So we don't get into a deeper exploration of EMDR and what it is and how it works and versus talk therapy. I would just refer the listeners, we've covered that topic a few times in earlier episodes. So just go to respondertv.com and just search EMDR. And we've covered that in depth. So please check out those episodes. So let's talk a little bit about the difference between virtual versus in-person sessions. Stacy, do you offer both? And are they different, or like how?
I do offer both. They are different. I find first responders prefer in person, but all therapists got very good at doing virtual therapy during COVID, you know, and even doing EMDR online. You know, Bonnie does it a little differently than I do. I have an app that I call up on my my laptop, and then I share my screen, and then there's a ball that goes left and right. So when we start doing the bilateral, they see the ball, they don't see my face. I can see them, and we do it that way. And I'm controlling the speed of the ball and you know, starting it and stopping it. So so yes, I offer both. And I think that answers your question.
Yes, Bonnie.
Yeah, I offer both as well. Obviously, none of us knew what Zoom or virtual was until COVID happened. And then what do? We roll with it. We evolved. We learned. We learned how to kind of perfect it to the best of our ability. The truth is, I have a mix. You know, I've had some people who say, I will never do virtual, in-person only forever. And that's what we do. And then I had some people that came through during COVID, like if it was someone from further up in the state of Connecticut and they couldn't find someone, if they were going to go without therapy, I would say, absolutely, let's see each other on Zoom. So I had some clients during that period of time that I never once met in person. And then I would say now, again, proximity matters. So some people would have a problem doing Zoom solely. But then I have other clients who say, no, I love it. Like I can be home. I can delegate the time. I'm not wasting 4 hours trying to drive and come back. And, you know, so it's very dependent on the person. In general, first responders want to be in person. And I've had a few people as well who they'll come and they'll feel me out in person. And then they go to extended Zoom because they've built the trust. They know who I am. You know, so it's so dependent on the person. But Stacy and I have learned how to roll and do all of it, I would say.
Okay. And for the virtual, does the patient have to be in the state of Connecticut in order for you to treat them?
Yes. So our licenses dictate that we have to see residents of Connecticut. Now, if a New York resident wants to drive over the line to come to my practice for therapy, that is allowed under the license. But I cannot go to another state that I'm not licensed in and provide therapy there.
Got it.
And also the peer support group that Stacy and I run on Fridays, it is available nationwide. So anybody could join because it's a peer-to-peer group. It's not a clinical group. And because it's peer-to-peer, you can go over state lines. And so that gives us the availability to have people come in from other states, which is also just another wonderful thing for us.
And how can people get information about that group?
So they can reach out to you through the podcast or to us at the end. You're happy to put our email addresses up. We are constantly allowing new group members to come in. It is free, confidential, and I would say it's a good mix of professional peer-to-peer advice and personal. So everyone has two sides of them. But we find that when people are together with their people, their first responders, they feel comfortable and at ease and more willing to share. And for first responders, they need to be with their people. Just like if I had a client who had miscarriages, I would want to find a support group for them to be with other people who knew what it was like to be in their shoes. And it's no different with our first responders. They do better when they're together and they can share mutual experiences and growth.
Got it. Well, last question before we wrap up, and that's insurance. Can you talk a little bit about EAP versus insurance versus out of pocket? What do people need to know, Stacy, about getting therapy and how the insurance piece works?
definitely ask the therapist, you know, what is their payment policy? You know, if you want to go through the EAP that is affiliated with your department, you're welcome to do that. Again, very important, though, ask if they are familiar with working with first responders. And if you're talking to them about trauma, are they a trauma-informed therapist? So those two, they have to check the boxes on those two. Mm-hmm. However, if you're, you know, if you're dealing with like marital issues or disciplinary issues with children, or, you know, you have some financial struggles or whatever, you can probably be well matched with somebody from EAP. Mm-hmm. You know, if you cannot pay out of pocket, you know, then you definitely have to ask the therapist if they accept your insurance. If they don't accept your insurance, ask them, do you offer a sliding scale? Right? Because there are a lot of therapists that will offer a sliding scale for first responders and veterans. And what is that fee? Mm-hmm. Another question is, all right, so if I pay you a sliding scale fee, and you give me a receipt, a paid receipt, can I submit that to my insurance for reimbursement? And find a therapist that will do that for you. There's certain information that has to be on that invoice, paid invoice, mm-hmm. that makes it easy for the client to submit to insurance, and then mm-hmm. they get reimbursed. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's how I handle it, because I don't deal in insurance. I've been a therapist for almost 25 years. There's just nothing more frustrating for me than to deal with insurance. So I just tell people I'm not a provider for any insurance, but I'll make it work for you. You know, if you're mm-hmm. a first responder or a veteran, I have a reduced fee, and I see if it works with them, and it typically does. So,
okay.
Yeah. And I agree wholeheartedly with all of those things. And there are a good amount of therapists, even on our team, that take insurance. So there definitely are providers that work with first responders who take insurance, but those of us who do not, we absolutely are flexible, and we submit invoices so that people can get reimbursed, and it can count towards their insurance deductibles, which is also helpful. So there are ways around it. And then certainly EAP providers, it depends what contract is either through the town or the department, what they provide. You know, maybe one says you can go for 6 couple sessions. You know, that's wonderful. If it's covered and they can give you someone to match you for couples therapy, excellent. Right. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just being a consumer about it and asking the right questions, you know?
We covered a lot of good stuff today. I know we're going to probably continue our series for clinicians and for first responders to help them better understand how all this works. So this is just part one of several. Before we completely wrap, any new projects or offerings that both of you have going on today or in the near future?
I'm going to let Bonnie answer that.
Well, we're very excited because our team is currently in the process of expanding outside of Fairfield County. So we're very excited about that. And everybody's pretty energized with it. So that's pretty great. And then we have a couple of proposals into a couple of different conferences that we're hoping to receive word that we're accepted. So lots of good, exciting things. We're always trying to learn and get out there. So we're excited.
Good work being done. And as far as our podcast goes, we're in the midst of building a database, a national database for our website of resources, including state-by-state grants, discounts, wellness options out there. And so it'll be very comprehensive. And so we encourage people to go to respondertv.com and look under, should be a tab, we'll probably call it resources. That'll be an extensive database of things out there that will benefit first responders. So Bonnie, Stacy, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your knowledge and all this amazing information that probably will change the game for people that were wondering about what happens in the therapist's office. It was fun.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
And we love this podcast. So thanks for the partnership, David. It's wonderful.
Please like and subscribe. YouTube, Responder Resilience. Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV. We're on LinkedIn and all the podcast platforms. And go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.